You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Friday, we're getting down on Friday. Hello there, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea, and we're very happy to kick off today's loaded show, and I'll tell you what it's going to feature. Sean Coleman, the Browns tackle, Dane Brugler, senior NFL draft analyst for CBSSports.com at 2, Bob Wischusen, the voice of the Jets and one of the top college football play-by-play guys for ESPN at 2:30. The Kid will be calling in from New York for the game predictions. We'll do that in our first hour, but before we do anything, we've got Sean Coleman right here, right now, in studio. Sean, welcome to the Dog Bowl. Welcome to CBD.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, this voice of yours is something. We were talking about before we went on the air. I mean, there's money in that voice.
A little something, man. It's a little something.
A little something. All right, let's talk about just where you're at physically, getting back in there the last 2 weeks. You've gotten out on the field. How you feeling?
Oh, it feels good, man. You know, just it's a dream for me to be playing in the NFL, so to be able to go out there for the first couple times. Get my feet wet or whatever. It's been a good experience for me.
What has been the biggest difference for you coming to the NFL from Auburn, where I'm sure you were thinking run block before pass block on just about every single play? What's kind of been the biggest change for you?
Just learning offense, being able to do the technical things, the little things, putting everything together. Obviously, the NFL is much faster than college, so you got to get used to the speed of the game, and it's something that I'm working on right now.
Just talk about how frustrating it is, and I'm sure there's high school players and college players out there who've been hurt and they feel like they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, where for you, you've overcome adversity one time in your life, you've had the MCL after getting drafted, and you just keep your head down and you do the work, and then it all starts to pay off, and getting out there and being active in a game and playing in a game has got to be very fulfilling for you.
Yeah, for sure. This whole summer I've been, trying to get back right with, the injury or whatever. But, the coaches and, the vets and everything, they've stuck with me, brought me along, tried to, teach me the ins and outs of the NFL, especially on the field. So, I'm just learning, trying to get out there. The more opportunities I get, the better. And, I'm just trying to make the most of the opportunity.
When you go through what you've been through, beating cancer, does it put everything in perspective in terms of, okay, I gave up a sack on this play, or we're 0-7, that you know what's important in life? Does it allow you to kind of handle all of those types of things better, do you think?
I mean, obviously we're going through a lot of adversity right now.
Sure.
So, we're out there playing hard. I feel like, whatever I can do to make the team better, whether it be giving the defense a good look in practice or working on a technique that I need to work on to make sure I get my job done, that's the big thing. So, like I said, we're facing a lot of adversity right now, but, we just got to keep chugging through.
How reassuring is it for you to get drafted to a place that has so many former players from your college or players that you played with, at Auburn? Because I know that I was a guy who got drafted to a place that there wasn't a familiar face, and it was kind of like you just trying to find a way to fit in. But when you have guys that you kind of rally together and you fit in together.
Yeah, I mean, we got a couple guys from Auburn. It's always a good thing, just to see familiar faces. But the whole team, man, is just, we got good guys in the locker room. So, I just embrace everybody, just try to learn from the guys or whatever. And they really bring me along. So
that's great.
What's it been like to be able to come as a tackle in the NFL to a team that's got Joe Thomas, who's going to be a Hall of Famer?
It's awesome, man. Just looking up at the guy, I mean, it's not too many words I got to say, man. I mean, it's Joe Thomas. So,
how's he with you, like, in terms of if you come to him, how's he in that role?
Definitely. I go to him for a lot of advice, just like I go, a lot of other vets like Greg and guys like that. But, also Joe T, man, I mean, he gives me so much knowledge on things that I wouldn't even think of, on the field. And, it really helps my game out.
The question that I always like to ask, young players or the rookies that we've had on this radio show, and I'll say beyond Joe Thomas, was there a player in college that, excuse me, that you watched, or is there a player now on another team beyond Joe Thomas that you watch and study that you kind of want to grow your game to play like once you get that full-time opportunity?
Yeah, a couple guys growing up I used to watch. I mean, obviously Joe Thomas, Orlando Pace, a couple guys today like Tyron Smith. Those guys that, I looked up to in college, used to watch their film and everything. So, just trying to build my foundation off what those guys did.
Sure. How different or how challenging has it been doing everything in reverse, going from being a left tackle in college at Auburn to playing right tackle now in the NFL?
It's not an easy transition, but like I said, I mean, it doesn't hurt to, you know, be able to know both positions. I probably played like a couple of practices in college doing right tackle. So,
okay.
You know, it's a big transition for me. And, you know, just for me to, you know, be able to get it down pat, you know, and be able to switch would be a very good thing for me. So.
And Coach Jackson's talked to us about getting you more involved, and we've seen kind of your playing time go from a couple weeks ago in the jumbo package. Last week got a series at right tackle. More coming on your plate this week against a very good Jets front. How excited are you to get out on the field more, and what do you think about this week's matchup?
I'm very excited. I love the competition. I love the challenge. You know, to be able to go out there and play against a good defense. So, you know, I think we had a very good week of practice this week, and I think we're ready to go out there and try to make something happen.
Being on the offensive side of the ball, obviously, you know, all these quarterback injuries, it's been pretty wild. You know, from you're down six guys have played quarterback for the Browns. Josh McCown coming back as a young player, is it nice to have that veteran back in there? And how's he been in practice this week?
Man, he's been awesome in practice, man. I mean, everything that goes through him, I mean, you know, he's making sure everybody's lined up right. He's making sure I know the snap count and things like that. Like, he's, you know, like five-star general out there. So, I mean, it's,
that's great.
It's pretty good for us to have him back.
So you come from Auburn. What do you think of Cleveland so far?
Cleveland's awesome, man, especially, you know, with these teams winning, you know, baseball. I don't really watch baseball, but it's awesome to, you know, Cleveland been trying to get a championship. Obviously, they got one this year, but if they can pull this one out, man, it'll explode. So.
Is there anywhere in Cleveland that you like to go now? Like, you have a favorite restaurant or a favorite thing to do in the city?
I believe it's Little Italy, Mia Bella's or
something. Uh-huh.
Like that. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I went there, man. It was
nice.
Awesome, so I gotta make sure I get my way.
Making
back
his way around.
Italian food, is that what you like?
Yeah, I'm big in Italian food.
Yeah, it's the best. What's your go-to order?
They had something that was kind of off the wall. It was like sauce or whatever. I forget what it's called, but I mean, any pasta, lasagna, anything like that, just the basic stuff.
I'm Italian. I love pasta. I could eat pasta all day. Yeah. I think it's as good as it gets. What do you like? What's the best movie you've seen recently?
Best movie I've seen?
Yeah.
Probably Straight Outta Compton. I'm kind of late, but I just saw it.
It was really good, right?
Really good movie, yeah.
And it's funny because it was fairly long, but watching it, and I grew up in California around that time, so I was very much into, you know, NWA, Ice Cube, and everything like that, Dr. Dre. I feel like it could have been 10 times as long because there was so much stuff that they didn't even touch on, but it was really good. And Ice Cube's son looks so much like him, it was kind of crazy. Yeah, it was a good movie. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, man, you got to put that on the list.
All right.
Put that on the list. Ahead of Curb Your Enthusiasm, so I know you'll never watch
that.
Put that above that. All right, good. So I do have to ask. So this voice, I'm telling you, you have a massive future here. And I know you said, you told me before when we were on air, you don't sing. But I'd imagine some of these guys on the team like probably want you to call ladies on their behalf and be like, you know, talking to them, right? Has that happened yet? No?
Nah, man.
I could see it happen. I'm telling you, this could be like a server. You could have a lot of side businesses, Sean. I think there's a lot of talent in here. Well, certainly I know the number one thing is to play tackle in the NFL, and we're excited to see you get to do that. And certainly appreciate you coming in here and spending some time with us. And congratulations on everything you've overcome and getting back out there on the field with the Browns.
Well, sure. Again, thanks for having me.
All right. Sean Coleman, our guest here in the Dog Bowl. We're going to have him on more. I think it's good for ratings. Sean Coleman equals ratings, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0050. We'll give you the latest news out of Berea. Yes, Josh McCown will start at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. That suspense is over, and we're going to talk about that. We'll hear some sound from the locker room. Dane Brugler at 2 o'clock, and you call your shot on this Friday. The Browns and the Jets at First Energy Stadium coming up in just 2 days.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. We're going to go to the phone lines. Ooh, and it's going to be fun. Let's just get right to it. Terry in Cleveland. Terry.
Thanks, guys. I just want to say this about McCown. I feel like this. If players on the Browns, many of them had half the heart and grit and determination that he did, he might not be the most athletic guy in the world. But his moxie, if that could drift into this team, on a deeper level at some better positions, the team would be a lot better.
You're right.
So that's where I'm at.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
Okay, talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Terry. Not bad.
Terry,
love that. Keep it coming. And to be very honest with you, the one thing that I thought is first and foremost, you're absolutely correct. And that's why, you know, we both kind of came out and said the same thing. But secondly is, that doesn't happen overnight.
No.
You know, and that's why I think, you know, Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry and Hugh Jackson keeping Josh McCown here when, you know, maybe a trade in, you know, early through training camp, you know, the Dallas was the one that was been rumored because of the Romo injury. Keeping a guy like Josh McCown, and as Terry said, that seeping into these young players that are the core and the future of the Cleveland Browns is a great thing. But I'll be very honest, and maybe that's the next time we talk to Josh McCown, you know, on this radio show or have an opportunity, is you ask him, you know, you can't have always had that moxie. You can always be a nice person and a great teammate, but who did it, and the same question that I asked Sean and I ask a lot of these young players, you know, who was the great teammate to you, or who was the leader that you looked up to early in your career that you wanted to mold yourself after? And I think that's where Josh has gotten it. Maybe it's his father, you know. I believe you spoke about him before. Also, his brother, who's played in the National Football League. So they've got the bloodlines. But I'm sure there's somebody else in the NFL that was like, because there was a guy for me, you know, when Randall Godfrey was one of those guys, Donnie Edwards was one of those guys where it's like, I want to play 10 years like you guys. I want to manage my money like you guys. I want to make a lot of tackles like you guys. I want to be a good person. I want to be philanthropic, you know, like LaDainian Tomlinson was in the greater San Diego community and all those things. Josh got it from somebody. And I think at this point right now, you know, 5 years from now when Corey Coleman's a captain and guys like Sean Coleman and Spencer Durango are the core of our offensive line, you know, even though they might not be able to, you know, get close to Josh McCown and hear what he's like in the offensive quarterback meetings and so on and so forth, but if you can just take a little bit of who he is, you know, and put it somewhere inside you, and when the time comes for you to be that guy and be that teammate, Josh McCown inspired you to make the right decisions and be the good person. Because it's so easy to be a bad teammate who, and I've said this time and time again before, and I've played on teams, even on good teams in San Diego, where a portion of the guys, and it's a small portion, I'm talking 10% of the guys, had the feeling like, I just work with you. You know, you're my coworker, not my teammate, not my friend.
Sure.
So I don't have to like you, even though I line up next to you and we run our gassers together and we, you know, all the blood, sweat, and tears we put into potentially winning the Vince Lombardi Trophy, you know, here in San Diego. It's when I leave, I go back to my family, to my Xbox, to my group of friends, and it's kind of like your relationship stops there. That is definitely not the case with Josh McCown. And that's what's so special to have him here this year as the culture is shifting with Hugh Jackson on top of this whole thing.
And I've said all along, Josh McCown may be my favorite Brown ever for what he brings, the toughness, the leadership, the grit, the determination, the fact that he's just a great guy. And I think to Terry's point, I think that is trickling down in this locker room because you hear the way the guys talk about him. They all respect the heck out of Josh McCown. I think you're getting guys coming in like Terrell Pryor, who is a competitor on that same level, tough, wants to win. I think a very much a leader, and I think probably that comes from probably being a former quarterback. I think there is an infusion of that, and I think when we talk about that after games this year, even though they have not gotten what they want, which is a win, or what you want, the listener, you want them to win. We all want them to win. There is a difference about this team after those losses than there was a year ago.
And let me ask you this question along those same lines, and it goes back to something that I saw between Von Miller and DeAndre Hopkins, them exchanging their jerseys as, you know, all Pro Bowl players, autographing it to each other, and, you know, Zeke Elliott and Carlos Hyde when Dallas played San Francisco, and them exchanging jerseys because they're Buckeye running backs and former teammates. Do you, being on the field, it's something that I haven't noticed or really even paid attention to, do you see any Cleveland Browns exchanging jerseys that, you know, you and I kind of took issue with after getting beat by someone, and yet being able to smile, take your pads off on the field, and exchange jerseys? Is that still something that's going on, or at a much smaller rate than it had in the past?
Much smaller rate, much more discreet, not a big public deal, and the only time that I can recall seeing it so far this year
was... And you don't even have to name a name if you don't
I won't, but okay. I will. It was this past Sunday in Cincinnati, and it was one of our players who probably is very good personal friends with Carlos Dansby. And they did it way, way after. It wasn't like on the field taking pictures. It was just like, it wasn't even an event.
Right.
But it was two guys that are probably very good friends doing that. So I didn't see any issue with that whatsoever. But to your
point. But that coincides with the point that you made.
No, that's not happening. There's no, they're not here to joke. These guys are pissed when they lose.
Right.
And they're getting sick of it.
And I can even, and I'll be very honest, I can tell because, you know, while I'm at home, if it's a road game or I'm at home watching the game, I always tune in to, it's not so much to see you, you know, do your post-game interviews, but it's like, I can see that you're angry after another loss because you'd love to have a smile on your face, beaming, talking about a win. And then when I can also see the, I don't want to say disgust, but the how upset the players are that you're interviewing soon after they've gotten out of their uniform, showered, and into their street clothes, then they're pulled out on the football field, have to, you know, collect their thoughts and do a semi-decent interview with someone like yourself.
Oh,
and
God.
And it's like Shelton, it's like pulling teeth.
Shelton was so pissed after the Titans game.
Right.
Terrell Pryor has been angry every time. You can tell Crow's upset. And the weird part about those player interviews, and I find it for myself personally a little awkward because they've lost.
Right.
You're talking to the guys who did, quote unquote, the best in the game. So there are positive things to talk about from what they did.
And yet they don't want to expound on any of it.
And they don't really want to talk about it, but you point it out. But then at the same time, you're not going to be like, hey, well, you lost. How are you? How's it feel to lose again?
Sure.
You know, it's I find those interesting. But, yes, there is a palpable difference, and I think a lot of it starts off at the top. Josh McCown, a big part of that. And Hugh Jackson saying he is the quarterback. He will be the starting quarterback on Sunday. That is one of the things to note about this game. He will be the starter. It is official. As for the injury report for the Cleveland Browns in this game, Corey Coleman and Cody Kessler are out. Kessler remains in the concussion protocol. Questionable, Marcus Burley, Jamar Taylor, and Joe Hayden. So that's three of your corners are questionable. Good news, though, out of New York, Eric Mangold, doubtful.
Yep.
Buster Skrine, doubtful to play against the Cleveland Browns. Austin Seferin Jenkins, doubtful. So they will be without Seferin Jenkins, Mangold, and Skrein. Lee and Carter are out. Clady Wilkerson are questionable. So some of their top guys out.
Yes.
But Buster Skrein being out hurts a secondary that's already been a little bit weak. And Mangold being out gives these guys in the middle a very good opportunity to disrupt this offense.
It definitely does. And I will I'll agree to disagree from a certain extent with the comments that Tracy Howard made yesterday that it, you know, it's more about us than it is about them, right? But as it is about us and our ability to execute, meaning the Cleveland Browns, both offensively, defensively, and on special teams, I would not be surprised that if you truly are passionate and chasing this victory and you're looking for some type of rallying cry, and this is not coming from the head coach because I know this is not the mentality of Hugh Jackson, there's got to be rumblings of conversations amongst such young players that go and look at this depth chart that you were presented with maybe on Wednesday and who you were potentially going to see, and now knowing on Friday that you can black line, for the most part, a lot of the names that were a part of that game plan on Wednesday that, and I'm not saying you had to be prepared for. That's the I wasn't going to say scared about. It's like that you had to be prepared for because of how efficient, what they do, that the film that you have on them is so significant that now you're going to see their backup. So you're going to expect, just like we've seen in our quarterback play, like we've seen at our wide receiver play without Corey Coleman, there's going to be a drop-off. Now, can the Cleveland Browns make it about themselves, execute at what they do to exploit that drop-off at the positions that are not going to have their starters for the New York Jets?
Yeah, Wesley Johnson is a third-year player originally acquired by the Jets off of waivers from the Pittsburgh Steelers, who has filled in a little bit at center, did last week fill in for them, but that is a massive downgrade for them. Now in the defensive backfield with Buster Skrein out, you look at this team, and they're going to have to slide up from Buster Skrein. Marcus Williams is the next guy up, and then Justin Burris. Justin Burris is a rookie. They also have Nick Marshall on the roster, which is a former quarterback. Justin Burris will come in as the third corner. Marcus Williams moves up. Williams has already been targeted a lot this year and has given up the most catches and yards in that secondary. So this is a big loss for them. Both of those guys are big losses. Again, Josh McCown will start for the Cleveland Browns. We go back to the phone lines now. We've got Dan in Hershey Pod. Dan, welcome.
Hey, go Tribe.
Go Tribe.
Go Tribe.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Now that I know Josh McCown is going to be playing this week, I really have my hopes up. I think, you know, the crow is going to fly, And the Browns should win this weekend with the 86 team in the building. I don't see how we can't. You know, this is our best shot thus far this season. Don't you agree?
It absolutely is their best shot, and I do think that this is an important game for the Browns to get the victory.
It is. Off the schneid.
Yes. Off the schneid, absolutely, and it's a great opportunity. And I think even furthermore, he mentioned the crow and him flying, and I think the combination of him and Duke Johnson and our ability to run a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because for us to take those shots down the field, it can't happen with Josh McCown taking a straight 5 or 7 step drop and throwing the football down the field. It's got to come in play action, and you have to have those safeties and the linebackers honor your ability to run the football. And that means you got to be, you know, semi efficient with Crow and Duke on the ground, where when you flash the football, you get their eyes and you stutter their feet to allow Ricardo Lewis or Terrell Pryor, Gary Barnage to work the seam to get behind a defender or get into a window and take advantage of Josh McCown's ability to throw the football down the field and us make a play in the air.
We saw Marquise Goodwin.
Hey, I have another
Darrell
question
Revis.
Within if it's all
I want
right.
Lewis. Go ahead. Yep, go ahead, Dan.
Oh, no, please make a comment.
I was just going to say, we've seen guys that are not household names get vertical against this defense, and this is a game for Ricardo Lewis. Remember, he was in here. What's his biggest asset? My speed. Let's see it on Sunday.
They don't feature the tight end on their offense, too.
Their tight ends have 3 catches for 26 yards on the season. In this day and age in the NFL, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
I can do that in one play on Madden.
Madden.
If you were my tight end in the preseason, I could get you 3 for 26.
For sure. You might go to me 3 times in a row.
I might. And if we got 26 yards, that's a first down.
I'll make one miss.
And I win all the bets.
Yes. But, I mean, even furthermore, that is something that you can't completely overlook, and you have to be scheme sound on how you approach a tight end. But when those tight ends are not a threat, your attention can then go to other places. That means you're 1 or 2 steps closer to Brandon Marshall. That means the safeties are leaning a little bit towards Anunua, whatever it might be, or the backers for that case, if they're either. And that's something I'll have to dive into maybe tonight in preparation for the football game, just to kind of be in the know, is are they leaving Kellen Davis or the tight ends in a lot in max protection, or are they just not able to get open? Because my point in being is, a Christian Kirksey or DeMario Davis guy who, as we've seen, has been matched up on Martellus Bennett, Jordan Reed, Rob Gronkowski, Delanie Walker in certain cases, that guy can now focus on the attention that Matt Forte and the threat that he is as a runner and a pass catcher out of the backfield.
Yeah, their backs are actually the 3rd and 4th leading receivers on the team. All right, I can tell you right now. You ready?
I am ready.
For their tight ends, the team has run, trying to see how many pass plays has this team run. Basically, 295 pass plays they've run.
Okay.
295 pass plays. Brandon Marshall has run routes on 286 of them. That is the tops on the team. As for the tight ends, Kellen Davis has run 65 routes. Okay. He has pass blocked 52 times. Brandon Bostic has run 18 routes. He has pass blocked 9 times. Safarian Jenkins, 12 routes, pass blocked 1 time. Braden Bowman, 10 pass routes, 0 blocks. So quickly, off the top of my head, that's 30, 60, 40, 70, 105. 80,
90. Yeah, 105.
So a tight end has only been in a pass route on 105 of their 295 snaps.
So about 30%, 35%.
Yeah, so that's a fairly –
That's what I mean.
So and that's a tendency.
That's a huge tendency. And also, even furthermore, it's where is he located when he does, in fact, go out for a route. Is he on the right side? Is he on the left side? Is he flexed out? Those are all tendencies, you know, when you whittle down that process of elimination that I talk about as a defender or a defensive coordinator on what to expect. And or, on the same accord, is he going to release? Or when he's in this location – they like to play action to their right, to their left, have, you know, run the waggle pass with a 3-man surface, which means guard, tackle, tight end, all pass blocking to allow Fitzpatrick to take those shots down the field. If we know those things, you know, Ray Horton and the can have the defense prepped to not bring pressure to that 3-man surface and bring it off the backside.
So let me ask you a question. Because we're talking now, there's only 105 plays where their tight ends have run routes. You can make a cut-up of that and know when the tight end goes in route, here the you'll know basically their entire playbook, I'd
correct.
Imagine.
And the
routes. First check would be to look, once that you see him going out, you know you're getting this, 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 and this situation.
And then even
they
furthermore,
like
it's when the tight end outside releases, he runs these type of routes. When he inside releases, he runs these type of routes.
And the receivers work in combination.
Correct.
There's a lot of stuff. So John Costco listening, our guy, John, dropping another dime right here. In 11 personnel, tight ends run routes at 58% of the time. In 12 personnel, only 30% of the time.
Right. 12 personnel is two tight ends, one running back.
Yep. And then at 11 will be 1-1 with the three wides out there.
Correct.
So when they go three wide, they're going in the route 60% of the time. That also tells you they're not playing that three wide look very often.
Correct.
They're playing two tight ends
and I think
a lot more.
Now, especially since Decker's been hurt. That's probably skewed a lot of the numbers.
Sure, they don't have a real number three. They've been
Correct.
Using Robbie Anderson, an undrafted free agent, in that role. Bob in Millersburg, announcer Bob is with us. What's up, announcer Bob?
Hey, not much. You tell me. How's it going?
We're doing very, very well. I saw that, Sean Coleman, what could you do with that voice, announcer Bob?
Oh, man, that's something, isn't it? That's some powerful stuff.
Yeah.
It's intimidating.
Yes.
Hey, great job last night to Wilhelm with that interview with Kevin Hogan on the coach's show.
He did do a very
good job. Very much.
Hey, real, you were talking about McCown, and I hear all these things on 850 about what a great guy he is and everything, and I think that's fantastic. The record just isn't there.
No.
But at the same time, I'm wondering, does anybody talk about him the way they talk, like Gary Kubiak? You know what I mean? Here's a guy whose NFL career just wasn't there. He was like 3-2 as a starter for all the years. Or Doug Peterson or the coach of the Cowboys. Is this maybe something that maybe when he hangs up the cleats, do you talk – does anybody talk around the facility about maybe a future on the sidelines for him with a clipboard?
I wouldn't
like
be
that?
Surprised. And,
oh,
and,
yeah.
and the thing about it is the one thing that you have to not concern yourself with, but take into account is the – you mentioned the record that Gary Kubiak had as a starter in the National Football League. And but take in the economics. How much money did Gary Kubiak? Yes, Gary Kubiak wanted to stay around the game, but what was the amount of money? Did he make enough money to not have to go work again? Especially very quickly after his career was over. Where in Josh McCown's case, you could say essentially over the next what he's been paid by the Cleveland Browns in the last 2 or 3 years is enough to go live the rest of your life off of, but yet he's got a 14-15 year career. And if he's already, and we know that Josh, being the person that he is, and him referencing, his family, being back in Texas, and him being here, and them only being here for a portion, of his career here in Cleveland, to dive right back in for a guy who's so comfortable financially, at least as I would understand, it might be a stretch. But I wouldn't be surprised that if a guy like him, whose heart beats, of a leather pigskin, that if he steps away, the kids then make their moves and he dives back in and becomes dad again, that if that itch doesn't come back up and a guy like Josh McCown, a little bit like myself, you never lose, what you have up in your head.
No.
That's why I asked the question, because I know, Wilhelm, I hear you talk about your coaching now and being a former player, and I'm wondering, is this the same situation with McCown? Hey, great job, guys. Go Browns this
Thank
weekend.
Thank you. Go Browns, go Tribe.
All right, that's right. Announcer Bob, our guest there right on the CBD. When we come back, more phone calls, 216-578-0850. We'll be back with that, and we'll also pick the games here in the first hour because our second hour is so loaded. Still to come, Dane Brugler at 2 o'clock, the voice of the Jets at 2:30 here on Cleveland Browns Daily and ESPN 850 WKNR. Brugler's at what's
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Know the kid. He's in New York, blowing us off again, doing what he does. But
so sad.
So sad. It is sad.
And what's the bet again? I know he lowered the over-under on his own.
Well, yeah, because he has no chance.
But what's at stake?
I don't know. Maybe just the opportunity to do this ever again.
Jeez.
All right, he's out, but we're here. Time to pick the games.
You're not even right calling now. In for the game picks?
Not even calling in. He said, I'm in a store in Manhattan. Oh, okay. Can't step
what
in
a boosh.
Phones don't work there?
What a boosh.
Can't step outside?
He's definitely an Eastsider.
That I won't condone you saying things like that because I would never do this. This is a priority for me, and that's the bottom line. So, but here we are. Updated standings
yes,
here.
Yes, please.
The kid gained one game, so the kid is – I'm still in the lead. Down,
so Zagura, yep. And kid down one, and, me down two?
Yep, so okay. We're all right there.
Boom, boom, boom.
We are all right there. All right, let's get to the games. Let's look at the slate for this week here, week number eight. By the way, what a dreadful performance by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I had the Titans all the way last night.
I did too. I think the Titans are actually not a bad football team.
I love – I know it's sometimes it's very unorthodox with DeMarco Murray taking the football. You have to defend the entire football field in the run game, which is sometimes very difficult to do because of his
those
ability.
Cutbacks?
Bounces it right, he'll bounce it out, or he'll cut it all the way back. And the sometimes if there is just an eensy-beensy little resistance in the hole, he'll just flat out stop his feet and take it out the front side or backside.
Yeah, that one where he.
Which sometimes I would imagine the offensive line coach. The offensive line coach has to be like wanting to kill him.
Is that one of those like in basketball? It's like no. Yes.
Absolutely. But the hard part is it's like you scheme, you can't scheme for what he's doing, right? But you do know that the Jaguars are susceptible on their edges, based on what you saw in film, but. The fact of the matter is you get the five guys up front to block a gap for you one place. And in some cases, you've seen backs before that just have a little – like I would say David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell have patience in that situation and wait for the hole where it originally was supposed to be to open, and then they hit it. Whereas DeMarco just stops his feet and pops that thing, goes back door a lot.
It is amazing, though, how much better he is in Tennessee without Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's,
and
Derrick Henry, by the way, looks pretty good too.
And oh, by the way, I've never seen the defense last night. And I texted you about this. I said the mistakes that the Jaguars were making, and Phil Simms did a great job pointing them out. It was eye discipline. It was bad tackling. It was bad angles. Or the same mistakes that I see in the high school kids that I coach. And these guys are one of the highest paid defenses in the National Football League. Am I not mistaken?
Yes.
I mean, Posluszny, Jalen, and the investment, Miles Jack, and Jalen Ramsey.
And they pay Gip, who had a bad
Gip,
play on that touchdown.
Bad play.
Lost. It was bad. The guy from Denver that they brought, Malik Jackson.
Malik Jackson got paid a boatload.
Yeah, they've got a lot of money and time and investment into that defense all over
no
the
wonder
field.
If I'm Shad Khan, am I having team meetings every week?
Yes. Let's get exactly right.
Seriously, what are you guys doing?
What is going on? All right. 216-578-0858. You can call us after this segment. Let's get into the picks right now. The first game in London, England, Cincinnati and the Redskins, the Bengals 3-point favorites. I will take the Bengals.
I'm going to take the Bengals too after last week's offensive performance.
And the kid takes the Bengals, so it's a clean sweep there for the three of us. The next game up, Arizona at Carolina. Carolina, a 3-point favorite coming off of their bye week. Arizona not playing well, but in Carolina. And this was the site of the NFC Championship game where Carolina absolutely destroyed the Arizona Cardinals.
You go ahead.
I'm going to take
place.
Arizona.
Kid takes?
Carolina.
I'm going to take Arizona.
I think Carolina might win that game. No? I think the Arizona D is good this year, and I don't think the Carolina
Michael
D
Floyd
is,
are going to give those corners fits.
Yeah, they have no corners.
Right.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
Well
no
done.
No pun intended.
Well done. Seattle at New Orleans. Seattle only a 2.5-point favorite on the road against the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, but Seattle's not – they're not scoring a lot of points, but they're not giving up a lot of points. I'm going to go – I'll go first. I'll take Seattle.
All right, it's my right to go first, and I will also take Seattle.
You're welcome.
The kid is taking New Orleans. Now,
good. Let's just both boat race him.
The issue there is, though, Russell Wilson's banged up, so it's
fine.
Possible that he doesn't play.
So how about a quick fantasy quit? Christian Michael against that defense?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, please.
Like a must start?
Start him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you talking Fire League? Like I'd rather have Spencer Ware in a Fire League.
Spencer Ware with KC?
Yeah.
Is Charles not getting any carries?
No.
And who do they play?
Indy.
Oof.
Indy has allowed, as I said last night on the coaches show, so the 49ers have allowed a 100-yard rusher in six straight games now. Indy's allowed it in three straight games. You know what I called it yesterday?
No.
A half an O'Neal. Three straight games with a 100-yard rusher. That's a half O.
So, Christian Michael, Spencer Ware, Quiz Rogers, money not an object. Spencer Ware?
Ware, Michael, Rogers.
In that order. I had DeMarco last night in my Fire League.
And he looked very, very good.
Yeah, I'm just upset. He got banged up before half.
I know, but he came out.
He came out, had a couple nice rips, but then I was upset they shut him down for the fourth quarter.
It made
from a fantasy
sense
perspective. It absolutely did.
All right, Tampa Bay against Oakland. It's a pick 'em in Tampa Bay. Oakland at Tampa Bay. The Raiders have been road warriors all year. I'm sticking with them.
I'll go Raiders.
The kid is taking Tampa Bay.
Good. We got three different already out of four.
Out of four. And you and I are the same on all of them. So either the kid is going to be in the lead and we're going to be way behind. Or
it's week seven.
It's week seven. Week eight. All right. New England at Buffalo. I'm going to take the New England Patriots.
I like the Pats.
So does
Do you like Brady this week?
I like Brady every week. Tom Brady's...
I'm talking fire league.
Tom Brady and Matt Ryan. Detroit at Houston. Detroit getting 2.5 points on the road, though. So Houston, they are the home favorites. I don't think Brock Osweiler is any good. I'm going to take Detroit.
I'm taking Detroit.
The kid is taking Houston. This is unreal. Unreal. All right. The next.
Then he should have been here. Watch when he loses.
I hope he loses
3-10.
I hope he loses every single game. All right. Kansas City at Indianapolis. I'm going to take the Chiefs.
At Indy?
Indy is getting 2.5.
At Indy. I'm going to take the Chiefs.
The kid takes Indy. I can't even make this up. We are different on 6 games.
Out of 7.
6 games out of 7, and you and I are exactly the same.
Fine.
So you got to do things up just to try to make up some ground
on
me.
It's one game, though.
I know.
Come on.
San Diego at Denver. Denver, 4.5-point home favorites. I'm going to take Denver.
I will take... He said who? San Diego, Denver?
Yeah.
In Denver?
In Denver.
Oh. Slick grass. It is going to be Denver Broncos.
All right. Philly at Dallas. Dallas, 4-point favorite. I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys.
I will take the Dallas Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott. Thank you very much.
Green Bay Packers at the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta is the favorite in this game by 3 points.
I'll take the Falcons.
I am going to take...
Remember the inside information. He's not right.
He isn't right. I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons as well.
Who the kid take?
The Atlanta Falcons.
Okay, that's fine.
That would have been a chance to go out on a limb for me right there, but couldn't pull the trigger. And then finally, the Monday night game, Minnesota at Chicago. Chicago, 4.5-point home dogs.
What a brutal, brutal, brutal Monday night game.
Yeah, I'm going to take Minnesota.
I'm going to take Minnesota. Bears stink. Right.
So a lot of differences this week.
Is Cutler back? Not that it matters.
Cutler is back, yeah.
Head coach doesn't like him.
Yes. By the way, our condolences out to Cavs power forward Channing Frye, who lost his mother to cancer today.
Oh, it stinks.
It does, yeah. It is. Yeah, it does stink. Our condolences. All right, those are the picks for week number 8. We'll reserve the Browns pick for later. When we come back, call us up, 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. Zagura and Wilhelm here on CBD.
ESPN Cleveland's Brian Windhorst paves the road.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Matt, we'll go back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850 in just a second. Dane Brugler coming up at 2 o'clock. But, hey, Fontana, did you see Andrew Hawkins' article at Monday Morning Quarterback?
I have not seen it, no.
All right, have you seen it?
I have not.
All right, so here's what it's called. Andrew Hawkins' article. Andrew Hawkins, My Problem with the No Fun League. And basically, it's an entire article he writes at Monday Morning Quarterback, which is very articulately and intelligently written. And it's just about the fact that the NFL is losing its way. And he says, one of the things is the NFL is an entertainment business, first and foremost, not a football business. The decisions are based on how the public viewing will respond, et cetera, et cetera. He says, it is for this reason that the league's crackdown on player celebrations has been so baffling to me. It's also what prompted my touchdown celebration interpretation of, quote, I'm just here so I don't get fined against the Patriots in week 5. You may have seen the quote-unquote highlight of me quote-unquote celebrating by simply placing on the ball on the ground and walking away like a robot. That's what he did. It obviously was intentional. So, as he said, ratings are down. He said, rules outlawing celebrations come at a time when the ratings are down. And as someone whose pension is directly tied to the success of the league, that's not something I'm excited about. The NFL now, more than ever, should look for ways to lift individual personalities and help sell its brand, right? It's the number one reality show in the country. The league is clearly the villain, but they're cracking down on celebrations and illegal hits. The illegal hits I get, that's for safety, but they're using illegal hits and celebrations in all of their television commercials. And as my grandfather always said to me, you can't stand on both sides of a fence. Said, as a player who's been on the receiving end of multiple illegal hits, I won't condone them, but I feel like most people can identify with touchdown celebrations on a very basic level because scoring in the NFL is hard. And I just saw him in the cafe after reading this article, and I said, I agree with you. I said, here's my plan, as I've said on the radio. You put your life on the line, literally, to play football, your physical well-being, your mental well-being, as we know, it's been documented. If you score, 30 seconds carte blanche.
30 seconds too much.
All right, 15 seconds, whatever. I'm directionally correct. The NFL is directionally wrong.
I agree. You are directionally correct.
So he says, look, I played in the NFL. He said, you're always told to act like you've been there before. He said, I never thought I was going to be in an NFL end zone scoring a touchdown. Secondly, he said, I played in the NFL 6 years and I have 7 touchdowns. So I never know if I'm going to get there again. He said, in part because my 5'7 frame isn't exactly red zone gold, which I thought was very funny. So, and this is really interesting. I didn't know this. As a kid growing up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, I badly wanted to be one of those exceptions. After my brother Artrell was drafted by the Bengals in 1998, I watched Chad Johnson energize a city from an entertainment standpoint with his personality and self-expression. He made it fun to go to Bengals games. He made it fun to be a Bengals fan. He filled stadiums with anticipation for his antics. I felt like he was the most entertaining football player I'd ever seen, and I became a wide receiver because of Chad Johnson, his persona, flair, and of course, celebrations. He said, I tuned in every Sunday hoping to see Chad Johnson or my other idol, Steve Smith, so that they would score so I could see their celebration. And he said, there's one that really stood out even now. I remember being in Toledo in 2005. We were going to the GMAC Bowl to play at University of Texas, El Paso. That week, Chad Johnson scored a touchdown and didn't do a celebration. He just acted like he couldn't think of anything and handed the ball to the ref, and I was disappointed. He said, and he did it because he was facing all the criticism over a celebration and was doing it to make a point. And Andrew Hawkins didn't like that. And he said, the league wants this to be a league that's about the shield, and they want the players to be faceless, anonymous warriors. And there's some truth to that. I think celebrations, you used to remember when Chad Johnson would have his list and then he would talk about all the celebrations and he'd tell what it was going to be and then he'd score and he'd do it. That was awesome.
Yes.
And the NFL has lost that. And I think that it is a big, big problem. And here's his closer, which is good. He said, look, if you went, and I think this is amazing. He said, most fans could be buying. He said, for instance, if I went to work in the Browns pro shop, you'd be hard pressed to find someone who recognized me. I disagree with that. I think there'd be a lot of people who recognize
Andrew
me.
Hawkins.
Yes.
Okay.
Most fans buying a jersey for me wouldn't recognize who I am. He goes, it's a hypothetical, of course, because my jersey isn't available in our pro shop, which was a side note. Efforts to suppress individual expression ensure this remains the case for the vast majority of NFL players. The NFL is the giant. The shield is what they're selling, not the name on the back of their jersey. They have to funnel you out. They're going to. That's the circle of life. But if the only means of making a smooth transition from one generation of NFL players to the next is to take the fun out of the game, then you risk losing the next generation of fans. Fans like my younger self who wanted nothing more than to see the Chad Johnsons of the football world celebrating their time in the sun. Take that away and you're probably attracting what you fear the most, disinterest. I agree with that. I think it is well written. I think the argument is well logically laid out. And this is a guy who not only understands it as being a fan, understands it being a player in the league. And I think he hit the nail on the head. I think the NFL's problem right now is that it's forgetting what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be entertainment. And the fact of the matter, to me, that the Josh Brown situation could go down the way the Josh Brown situation went down, and you have guys getting fined and impacting play because they're dancing in the end zone, means that the NFL has its head up its you-know-what and doesn't know the sun from the buttocks.
Even furthermore, it's as much as the NFL wants to say that they're spending all these resources, you know, to find it, to make the game better and make the game safer. And I see, and you and I are even a part of it, the fan experience that comes with, you know, being one of 16 locations or one of 15 locations that's hosting an NFL football game, the resources that are put into game day experience, right? And I just think that after hearing that and knowing what we know, I think this is the furthest that the consumer and the NFL as the league itself are the farthest apart they've ever been. The NFL knows nothing about their consumer. They can't, other than who they partner with that they can make the most money from, that they can have the most commercial time, and drive the sales within in and around their stadiums, meaning beer, Nike, and the likes of those types of, you know, grandiose marketing schemes that a company wants to partner with in an NFL franchise or the NFL in general. I mean, how many official vehicles do we have of the NFL? It's crazy. It's
You're
like
right.
We've got like seven of them. How are they all the official? It's just a marketing ploy after marketing ploy after marketing ploy. And eventually, to me as the consumer, as a former player, it's watered down to me. So imagine these highly intelligent individuals that are spending more and more money each and every year in these 16 stadium or 32 stadiums. It's like, is it not going to water down to them too?
Of course it is.
Right.
Of course it is.
Make what? How is anything going to be different? Because the I would say 30,000 of the 74 that are going to fill First Energy Stadium know what a fade route is. Okay. Uh-huh. But I promise you, they know that a deep ball was thrown, quote unquote, on a fade route to this player, and he did this when he scored that touchdown. That those are the memories that they're going to have. Oh, remember that fade route, that back shoulder catch that he made on that fade? No, but I remember the one that he made in the end zone, and then he did handed the ball to the referee and ran over to the sideline?
It was boring, right. And it's so funny because, like, for example, my dad is a total act like you've been there before guy. But my dad loves showmanship. And my dad loves showmanship. These guys can't talk. They can't. It's not like wrestling where they could score and then you give them a microphone and let them talk to the crowd and the other team. They don't get to do that. They have to do something expressive physically.
You're absolutely right. And even furthermore to that point, and I've lived it myself as a mid-tier. I was a starter for a few years in the National Football League, but otherwise I was a mid to late tier player in 5 of my 8 years in the National Football League. So I can understand why Andrew Hawkins, you know, can say, I can walk into a Starbucks in San Diego, walk through Fashion Valley Mall. Andrew Hawkins can go to Crocker Park or even his own team shop and no one's going to recognize him because we wear a helmet on our head. And so you can't visually, and I think in Hawkins case, you know, where for me, it's like I'm 6'4". In Hawkins case, people are going to go, you know, he's a 5'8" guy. He's a normal guy, you know, who could be, you know, wearing a badge that says Andrew and a Cleveland Browns t-shirt helping you buy some Salute to Service gear. And
absolutely.
You wouldn't know the difference.
You're right. You're absolutely right about it. And, you know, you look at soccer. It's the personalities in soccer. And Messi does his celebrations. And the AC guys pull a shirt on and then they slide down. They all do that. In hockey, these guys, you think the teams, they go run and hug each other and all do a it's not that it's choreographed, but they do a celebration and everybody gets fired up. What they're doing is so difficult that you should get to celebrate it. It is supposed to be fun. And just to spike, whatever they want to do, let there be fun. Can you imagine if Deion Sanders couldn't do his high-stepping, that'd be taunting and his dancing? Come on.
But even further to go back to Hawkins, it's like, yes, he talked about only scoring his 7 touchdowns in the National Football League, which is that's tough sledding for a guy like him. And yes, he's not a red zone target. In today's NFL, with the emphasis they're putting on player safety, you are truly one play away from never playing again.
Right.
So
again,
not only is he limited on the opportunities to score a touchdown, which, you know, we could have seen his last when he did the robot. That I don't know. I hope not. But he could get concussed and hit for health reasons. He could never play again. He can get hurt and or concussed and choose not to play again because of the risk. And as we know, Andrew's a very intelligent individual who takes, you know, life after football very seriously.
He does. And the icky shuffle, iconic Cincinnati as well. I just let them have fun enough. Let them have fun enough already. All right. We'll talk with Dane Brugler when we come back. See, oh, there's Mason Wilhelm in the studio throwing the dab around. We'll be back with more CBD. Dane Brugler up next.